going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
In honor of Military Appreciation Month, Verizon thought of a lot of different ways we could show our appreciation, like rolling out the red carpet, giving you your own personal marching band, or throwing a bumping shindig. At Verizon, we're doing all that in the form of special military offers. That's why, this month only, we're giving military and veteran families a $200 Verizon gift card and a phone on us with a select trade-in and a new line on select unlimited plans. Think of it as our way of flying a squadron of jets overhead while launching fireworks. Now that's what we call a celebration, because we're proud to serve you. Visit your local Verizon store to learn more. $200 Verizon gift card requires smartphone purchase, $799.99 or more with new line on eligible plan. Gift card sent within 8 weeks after receipt of claim. Phone offer requires $799.99 purchase with new smartphone line on Unlimited Ultimate or Postpaid Unlimited Plus. Minimum plan $80 a month with autopay plus taxes and fees for 36 months. Less $800 trade-in or promo credit applied over 36 months. 0% APR. Trade-in must be from Apple, Google, or Samsung. Trade-in and additional terms apply.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Connor Orr. That's my dog Ernie upstairs barking at the FedEx guy. Albert Breer's here, and I'm going to start in New York because I can't believe that we're still doing this Taylor Swift thing, and now the NFL is doing the Taylor Swift thing. Do you see that their subhead on their Twitter page is the Chiefs are now 2-0 as Swifties? And
I did not see that, but I am more and more.
It's fake.
I think so too. I think on Friday, like the radio show I did in Boston, they gave me and these guys are really creative, and they kind of like took me through their full like tinfoil hat like conspiracy theory. You know, I'm like, you know what? This actually really makes sense. Like, because the NFL has forever chased the female demographic, and they've struggled to get it. And they know that there's nothing more buzzworthy on that side of the aisle than Taylor Swift. And they were shameless enough to cut. Like, I mean, we've seen some of their shameless acts over the years to try and get the female audience. And this wouldn't even rank in like the top 10. You know what I mean? Like, this would just be sort of par for the course that they would do something like this. So I am officially on this Monday morning, Connor, especially after the 10 million shots of that box last night. I'm all the way there. This is all fake. This is all contrived. This is a everyone wins situation. Taylor gets to promote her movie. What else is it? There's one other thing, right? Is a new album coming out? I can't keep track of all of this.
I have no idea.
Okay, so Taylor gets to promote that stuff with a different demographic, right? Like the football demographic is different than hers. The NFL gets to try to take a swing at the female audience. And then Travis Kelce gets an enormous benefit from this. Travis Kelce's following has exploded.
900,000 new followers.
This is like an everyone wins situation. And it's all fake.
A 14 place jump in jersey sales. Like, we were taught in school to follow the money, and it's right out in front of us. Like, it's like, you know, it's not even like they're hiding it. And I think,
you know, Emily reads some of this stuff sometimes though. And like over the last week, like actually clicking on some like people.com links, you know, like I've seen some stories she reads, and I always think that like the page six type stuff, you know, and I always think it's funny when there's like an insider into somebody's relationship. Like, who would be the insider into your relationship, Connor?
When they
quote sources into your relation and then into people's relationships, like, yeah. Who would the sources be?
I mean, it would be like my neighbor or like my mom or my wife's mom. It would be like, yeah, I think they're fighting, you know? Yeah. Yeah. I don't have a publicist.
I always think that's great. Like, is the sources into the relate, like the insiders into the relationship, like, is that person like just coming over and hanging out on a Tuesday or something, and that makes them an insider?
So Brian Costello, who's awesome, Jets beat writer for the New York Post, and he tweeted the bio for the NFL's Twitter page, which is Chiefs 2-0 is Swifties. And he's totally right. This is the kind of stuff that fuels nut job conspiracy theorists, not just the ones with the podcast, but the fans who watched that game last night and saw the outcome derailed by an extraordinarily questionable call on Sauce Gardner. And I'm not saying it's good, bad, right, wrong, or indifferent, but if you're a Jets fan and you've already seen your entire season railroaded by the NFL's greed and desire to milk whatever they can out of this franchise, and you had to do Hard Knocks, every single game is on prime time, your schedule's ridiculously front-loaded and impossible at the beginning, I don't know what else you could think right now other than your team is just being actively manipulated by the league. And listen, I don't believe it. You know, Andy Benoit and I used to fight about I used to get him going on the NFL is fake thing a while back. We had a lively discussion about that after Peyton Manning's second Super Bowl. But I don't believe it. I'm not one of those people. But you're not making them go away.
I just noticed, I just went to the NFL's Twitter page. It is now, the header is three shots of Taylor Swift. And like, if you look at the bio, I think this is a Taylor. I think this is a Taylor reference. We had the best day with you today.
Maybe.
Is that a Taylor reference? I think it has to be, right?
To be clear, I'm not anti-Taylor Swift.
I'm not either.
I think she's a fine musician. Yeah.
I think she's a genius. I think she's a legitimate genius. And everything she touches turns to gold. And there's a reason for it. She's obviously incredible.
Yeah. I just don't. You know what? I think I'm hot too because I'm coming off the. I wrote about.
By the way, those are the lyrics to those are lyrics from a Taylor Swift song titled "The Best Day."
Okay.
So there you go.
I think I'm just a little hot coming off the Toy Story broadcast too. Did you catch any of this?
I did not. I was actually coaching third grade football during the Toy Story broadcast.
Okay, good. So. Yeah, I threw that on and I was just like, "What are they doing?" And I get it. You're trying to get kids to watch football, but how about just allowing kids to watch football or to have kids play football and not to watch the technology was incredible, but it looked like Minecraft, you know? And I just felt like I watched it with my son for a minute and I was like, they're trying to just, it's like Cocomelon. They're just trying to hypnotize him. So we bang that thing fast.
I mean, I just feel like that's like, there's some people at the league office who don't have enough to do. And that's how things like that wind up coming to life.
fix the problems. Like, we're focused on Taylor Swift and the Toy Story broadcast, like digital chains so that chains don't break during the game, grass fields. Fix the actual problems with the games. My God. Anyway, 23-20, the Chiefs beat the Jets. The Jets fall to 1-3. The Chiefs are at 3-1. I think my takeaway from this game is the takeaway that everybody had, which was this was a feisty, very feisty Zach Wilson game. I think that Robert Saleh, to me, win or lose, just earns so much credit because during the week he knew he was going to get demolished. And he said, you don't throw people away. You just don't throw people away. And I give him so much credit because honestly, this is job on the line stuff. And he stuck with Zach Wilson. He dug in. There was no sample size and Zach played really well. I was very happy for them.
And look, I think that the biggest problem that Robert Saleh had was can he continue to sell Zach Wilson to the locker room? Because the premise of that entire team, the construction of that team this year was we're going for it, right? So there are guys in that locker room like Alan Lazard and Adrian Amos and Randall Cobb, guys that were that are older vets that are there to chase the ring. And guys like that aren't going to have patience. They don't care what this means for your franchise in 2025. They care about right now. And the younger guys in your roster are going to be worried about what's going to get them in a position to get paid.
Right.
And so it can be hard to sell a developing quarterback to a locker room. And I'll give Robert Saleh credit for standing by Zach Wilson, because if he didn't do that, it would have been impossible. It would have been impossible for Zach in that locker room. And, it sort of made me think of something I said earlier in the day about how Josh Dobbs should get us to question everything about how we develop quarterbacks, mm-hmm. how the NFL develops quarterbacks, how the NFL nurtures quarterbacks. Because, you know, you have this guy in Josh Dobbs who got, what, 6 years to kind of learn away from the bright lights. And then because he was on different teams, because he had different experiences, because he was developed away from game action, because people invested in him, because he had a chance and people had patience with him. And, you know, every single movement of his wasn't, you know, litigated on a public level on a week-to-week basis. You know, he had a chance to kind of get better in the background. And now you have a guy who's so adaptable that he could be traded a week before the season and start and take maybe the worst roster in the league and have it competitive over the first month of the season. It really, like, to me, like, looking at Josh Dobbs makes you question everything. And so if 6 years can do that for Josh Dobbs, why are we throwing guys out after 2 or 3 years? That's what I don't get about it. It's fair to make an assessment on a guy and say, like, he sucks now. But to say a guy's never going to be good just ignores so much history, you know? Like, Alex Smith is a phenomenal example of it, right? Like, how many times was he given up on in San Francisco?
Yeah.
Like, oh, he can't play. But no one was looking at the fact that, like, he had five coordinators his first 5 years in the league. He had two head coaches. Everything was completely unstable around him. And then Jim Harbaugh gets there in 2011, says, no, I'm sticking with him. And he takes off, and then he's in the league for another decade as a starter. You know, like, it's just, we have so many examples of why we shouldn't make definitive and declarative statements about young quarterbacks, and yet we do it over and over and over again. Right. And like, I think like the intention of the Jets in the first place was, we have to press the pause button with Zach Wilson. We may have wronged him by playing him too fast, right? And by putting too much on him too early. And so the whole intention on bringing him back this year was to allow him the chance to do the Josh Dobbs and develop in the background for a year or two. And that got blown up. But just because that plan got blown up, like, that's not Zach Wilson's fault. That plan got blown up. It's not anybody's fault. So now you're going to just completely throw the kid out. Why? Because Aaron Rodgers got hurt. There's a lot of, like, really faulty logic that goes into the way that he's been talked about over the last couple of weeks, I think.
I agree. I'm not just saying this because I wrote about it, but to not even, you know, I think we're in such a easy Twitter dunk society that when Zach Wilson and Nathaniel Hackett get paired up, everyone's just like, ha ha, this is going to be terrible. And without looking at any of the history of any of these guys.
Like, the Nathaniel Hackett went to the AFC Championship game with Blake Bortles.
With Blake Bortles. He got Ryan Nassib drafted out of Syracuse. I went to Syracuse. Do you know who was the last quarterback drafted before Ryan Nassib? Donovan McNabb.
I was gonna say Troy Nunes.
Like, I think drafted as a quarterback. I think there was a couple of quarterbacks that turned into tight ends, but okay. and literally broke all the school records with this guy. And then he got Kyle Wharton, I believe, to the doorstep of the playoffs.
Yeah,
two MVPs with Aaron Rodgers after he was lost in the woods for a little while. The guy's good at what he does, you know, and we're seeing in Denver now, who knows, make your own judgments about what happened there. But I think that this thing could work. Like, okay, yeah, the Jets are 1-3, but their schedule softens up a little bit. They played a lot of their best defenses up front. You know, Zach Wilson is going to look bad against the Cowboys, but how many other people are going to look really bad against the Cowboys, right?
Right.
And now in the next few games, like, they have the Broncos coming up. I mean, Zach Wilson could legitimately put up 50 points against that team. The Eagles, who are really good defense, Giants, Jets, Giants before Halloween, which, if he can handle the pressure, I think.
That's coming off a bye, too. So
it's coming off a bye. You know what Wink Martindale's going to do. He does it well, but you know what he's going to do. And then the Chargers, November 6th, the Raiders, November 12th. You don't play a really good team. You play the Eagles and the Bills in the next month and a half. Otherwise, you're good.
Well, but Connor, like, that's like, and that was the whole logic behind this. And I think we talked about this last week. To me, the problem with going away from Zach Wilson, like, in the first place was, A, there's no better option out there right now, right? And B, once you go away from him, you can't go back again, you know? So, and I think Sala knew that. Like, if we bench him in consecutive years, we can't sell him to the locker room again. And so it was either, can we get Zach Wilson into a place where he's a good starting quarterback by November, right? Or do we go and trade for somebody? And is going and getting, say, like you can find a way to get Case Keenum out of Houston, is that necessarily better than what Zach Wilson is going to give you?
Yeah.
When Case Keenum's going to be coming into a new system and all that different stuff. So I don't know. I just think it's, I understand why they did it. Now, I understand the other side of the argument too, that like maybe you felt like you just wanted a game manager and a guy who could kind of run the offense. And there was some merit to that too. But I certainly think the idea that it was baseless to go forward with Zach Wilson was faulty all along.
I agree. On the Chiefs end, I mean, listen, this is a, I hesitate to talk too much about the Chiefs. Like, it's unfair, right? They're just so good. And when they have bad games, like Patrick Mahomes said last night, sometimes you have to win ugly, and who cares? And I do think that there is an immense value in them having these kind of games where Isaiah Pacheco has like a 48-yard touchdown run where, let's see here, they were, you know, they ran the ball 35 times. They gained 5.8 yards per rush. And I do think that there's an inherent value in that. They controlled the clock. Like, these games take a little bit of juice off of Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, maybe instead of the marathon that each week is, you know, he gets to come out of there just a little bit lighter and, you know, not feeling all that, well, that pressure, you know?
I also think, like, in a lot of ways, they're like what the Patriots used to be. And then I feel like every one of their games is like a playoff game for the other team. You know what I mean? Like, so they're always going to get, like, they're always going to get everything from the other team's not. The other team is going to throw what it has at you, and you're going to be facing that every week. And it's going to be sort of a playoff atmosphere. It's going to be like the on the field is going to be a playoff level effort from the other team, because that's who they're being measured against. So you have that. And I think the other thing is, like, they do have like a little bit of, you know, I think the freedom, because they know in the end they're going to wind up with 12, 13, 14 wins regardless, to use the early parts of the season to work some things out. And so, you know, what does going through this early part of the season mean for Sky Moore? What does it mean for Rashee Rice? What does it mean for the way that those pieces fit around Patrick Mahomes? What does it mean for their new tackles, for Donovan Smith and Juwan Taylor? Like, I think that there's that part of it too, where these teams that are the super elite, even Buffalo to a degree, is like this, like where, you know, if you're in that, if you're being honest with yourself and you're a coach on that staff or you're a guy in that front office, you know, like, you're going to be there at the end, right? So it's worth it to use the early parts of the season to develop different elements of your team, because you think it could serve you well in January. And I think that's sort of what the Chiefs are going through right now.
Last thing on this game, and then I promise we're going to move on. The call was horrific at the end of this game, and I'm watching it. I'm like watching it like the Zapruder film right now. And so, okay, I get it. Sauce Gardner's hand is on the one on Valdes-Scantling's jersey. You put your hand on the back of the jersey, you're going to set yourself up for getting called. However, that happens, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 seconds go by, then the interception happens, and the second the interception happens, the flag is thrown. If that was such an egregious call, if you're the official, you throw that flag the second it happens, and you don't rile up a bunch of Taylor Swift crazed conspiracy theorists, Albert. That's all.
Yeah, I'm watching it again too, actually, and it's yeah, it's not good. It's not good. I mean,
doesn't it look like? Okay, I'm not a ref conspiracy theorist. I'm not. I promise you, I'm not. I've talked to officials about this. I understand very deeply how hard this game is to officiate, and they do a very good job. Like, you know, I mean, NFL says they're 95% accurate, which, like, okay, I say I'm a 95% great writer, but I'm doing my own audit, right? Is there someone doing an independent audit on that? No, but I do think they do a pretty good job. That to me is a call that, you know, it just raises all sorts of suspicion for me. You know, it's just like one of those, and like fake suspicion, fan suspicion. But at the same time, right. It's just like, oh, that is, it's not good. The whole thing wasn't good.
Yeah, yeah. And it invites, like, I mean, and this is one of those things too.
It's the problem with gambling.
Well, honestly, it's the problem with a lot of things, but I think it's like, it's one of those things too. Like, this feels like one of those where shouldn't they be using the guy up top? Like, shouldn't the guy up top be like, because it's like, this is like where the technology can help you. And this is where the league needs to use the technology, where the guy up top can buzz down to the head official and just say, hey, look, pick up the flag. You know what I mean? Like, and the refs can act like they had the discussion on the field if they're not comfortable with going up top. But this is the problem, is that, like, you have the technology to take care of this in the moment and you don't. And like, look, maybe part of this is, this feels to me like, you know, Sauce has always been kind of handsy, and, you know, you wonder, did Spagnuolo or someone else, or did Reed or Nagy or someone say something, you know, like, hey, watch him with the hands going into the fourth quarter. But this is so easily correctable from the booth because everybody has all these angles right away. And this is what it was always so confusing to me about, like, the argument against the Sky judges. You got 25 million people at home watching this game with the benefit of a dozen different angles in high def, right? And you're not giving that to the guy who's standing on the field in charge of the game.
Yeah.
Why? You know what I mean? Like, especially in a spot like this, like I said, you don't want to have every one of these. You don't want to have every one of these be reviewed, but like, when it's really obvious in a key spot like that, it makes sense to do it.
I agree. Moving on. You had some great stuff in the column, which everyone should read now on SI.com from Buffalo, the Bills. For a minute, like, I thought that they were going to put up like 50 some points at, like, the week after Miami did. So it was 48-20. And for a while that game was getting out of control. And I was like, are the Bills somehow passively pissed that the Dolphins put up 70 points the week before? And are they trying to do it now? But this was an absolute unleashing by Buffalo. But yes, Josh Allen threw for 4 touchdowns, ran for another, but I'll say this too. I wrote in, so I had my head coaching list come out on Friday, and Ken Dorsey is on there. And I wrote that I think that Ken Dorsey does some creative things in the run game. And I got pretty crushed by that. Someone said that it sounded like I had a chatbot write me a blurb for that. And I promise I've tried to have chatbot help me and it just won't work. But Latavius Murray, 8 yards a carry. Damian Harris, 5 yards a carry. Is 29 carries for 104 in total the best? No, but I do think that this was a good all-around Bills win. Their defense was great.
Yep.
I mean, Vic Fangio, Vance Joseph gave up 70 points to this team last week without Jalen Waddle. This week with Jalen Waddle, the Bills hold him to 20. They're physical, and I wonder if this is one of those blueprint games where, you know, what are people going to be showing the Dolphins next week? Exactly what the Bills are showing them this week, because they know that it can at least slow it down just a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think like I do think, like, it's, well, first and foremost, I think the Bills have had to hear about everybody else for like the last 3 months, mm-hmm. right? And they were that team last year where everybody was talking about them going into the season. And I almost feel like they've been forgotten. Like, even within their own division, like, everybody talking about Miami, the Jets before Rodgers got hurt. And even some people picked the Patriots, I heard, to win that division.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. But I think, like, Buffalo, there's this remember us thing going on there. You know what I mean? Like, there's this, like, hey, we still have maybe the best quarterback in football besides Patrick Mahomes. We still have one of the best receivers in football. We still have a program that's been in the playoffs 5 of the last 6 years. And I think what you saw is a team that is more talented than most people realize. And, like, I think you saw some of their best players on defense coming up huge. Like, Russo had a big game. Milano had a big game. Bernard, who's replacing Tremaine Edmonds, had a very big game. Micah Hyde, who He's coming off the injury. He has a pick. And you know what the key was, Connor? It's so easy to say, like, oh, yeah, like, there's a blueprint here. I mean, to me, the blueprint was, and it's going to sound like coach cliche-ish, it's just a win on first down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's all it is. It's like finding a way to keep the Dolphins out of, like, second and four. And, like, if there's been one criticism of the Shanahan offense over the years, it's that it doesn't work as well when you're off schedule. And if you're in third and long or you're in second and 20, well, like, then, like, the whole marriage between run and pass and the illusion of making everything look the same, like, that doesn't work the same way if you're in long yardage. And so that offense is incredibly difficult to deal with when you're on schedule. But if you can knock it off schedule, well, now there's a different dynamic for everybody playing within it. And I thought some of the most impressive stats of that Denver game for Miami, right? Their first third and long, Connor, and I think we talked about this last week, their first third and long in that Denver game was on their seventh touchdown drive. Their first third down period was on their third touchdown drive. Like, they were never off schedule. And, like, if you look at, like, the context of their first three games, for the most part, that's what it is. They stay on schedule. The Bills were able to get in the backfield and create negative plays and put themselves in a position where it was like, we're going to knock you off schedule, and then we're going to see what happens. And the Dolphins' offense looked different. And so it's easy to say, like, a blueprint. And I talked to McDermott about it after the game. And he's like, it wasn't really a blueprint. It's just more like us playing to our potential and us winning the early downs. And if you win the early downs, then you give yourself a shot. Like, if you're in third and two with Tyreek Hill in motion, you're in trouble. You know what I mean? If that's third and 15, that's different. You know, like, then you can game plan it a little differently. So I think Buffalo was like a statement win for them in saying, like, kind of like the whole remember us thing. But I also think, like, there was a little something there exposed with Miami where it's like Tua's had a great, like, MVP worthy first month of the season. Is he the same quarterback playing from behind? Is he the same quarterback in third and long? And is that offense the same playing from behind and in third and long? Those are the questions I think the Dolphins still have to answer that the Bills exposed, you know, on Sunday.
Yeah, I think that Buffalo did a really nice job. And this is Milano. This is them having really smart linebackers.
I think, by the way, I think Milano is one of the most underrated players in the league.
I do too.
The Bills chose to keep him over Edmonds.
Yeah. And you can see why, like, you know, just going back and haven't gotten to do a full rewatch yet, but the way that they were able to, and New England did this in the second half of their Dolphins game last year, which is you use late breaking kind of guys who become zone defenders after the snap and they mess up Tua's first read. And I'm not going to get into the murky waters of Tua non. I think he's a great quarterback, but any quarterback at all, any rhythm player, if you take away the first read, makes life more complicated. It just does. And Buffalo did a really nice job of that, jumping in the lanes. And all of a sudden, because right after the snap, Tua knows. He's got his arm cocked back. He knows where he's going with the ball. If you take that away, all of a sudden you start to get him just a little uncomfortable. And he's good on the move. And he's like, Tua's going to be fine. I'm not worried about Tua. This is not an indictment of Tua. But I thought it was a nice job. It was a great game plan. And you're seeing kind of, these are those games. Sean McDermott takes a lot of crap. These are the games where it's like, hey, this is, I know what I'm doing. And this is the reason I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I think, like, this felt to me like the last couple of games have felt to me watching Josh Allen like this is like the Kansas City Josh Allen, you know what I mean? Like, what were I don't know that people are taking notice of, but it like feels to me like that player that we saw in the playoffs against Kansas City in January of 2021, like, that's who we're getting right now, you know? And there were a couple of throws that he made that were, there was the one to Gabe Davis, you know, there was a couple of the throws to Steph. Like the touchdown where he's going across his body in a scramble drill and finds Steph underneath. You know, you're seeing him make some of these throws that look undefendable, you know? And like when he's at his best, it's got a different look than I think any quarterback in the league, just that it looks like everything is moving downhill for the offense. Like the entire offense is moving downhill. And I certainly think against the Raiders, you know, 2 weeks ago, last week, and like last week and then this week, you know, I think we've seen that player, like what he did at home against the Raiders, against the Commanders in Washington, and then against the Dolphins. Like, this is the Josh Allen that you saw in Kansas City on that night. And man, like, if he can be that guy consistently, look out.
We are headed to Dallas. You brought up the fact, Albert, that some people picked the Patriots to win the division. I was that guy. I'm not. I saw Tom Curran on Twitter. He had a similar take. I'm not going to lump him in my bucket directly because I don't think that's fair to do with anybody. But he kind of articulated, I thought, well, he said, you know, I thought that with Bill O'Brien back, this team would get back to what they always always done, right? Which is outthink people, outsmart people, just do things better. This was the worst loss, I believe.
Bill Belichick's 29 years as a head coach, yeah.
Two defensive touchdowns by the Cowboys. They walked down the field, and the only reason they didn't score on that opening drive was because Tony Pollard ran into Dak Prescott. This was an unmitigated disaster, and I'm not quite ready to give up just yet. Like, I'm there. I'm almost there. I'm about to sell whatever my Patriots
let's give that some context, Connor. Are you willing to back off of your pick for them to win the division? Or are you going to stick with that too? Because there's a difference between giving up on them and backing off like they're winning the AFC East. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I need one more week, right?
Okay.
And I think that I could perpetually say that throughout the season. But I remember in week three, we were talking about what we wanted to write. And I remember saying, give me one more week before we bury Justin Fields, right?
Yeah.
Give me one more week. And then Justin Fields comes out and does what he does. And we'll talk about that next. But I the Cowboys have done this to a lot of people this year.
Yep.
And so part of me is like, all right, give me one more week. If they can get to 2-3, then I'm, you know, I can settle back in. But
then they have the Raiders in week six, and maybe they're back at 500 and they're going to Buffalo at 3-3.
Yeah. Right.
So, like, I think that's why the Saints game is so interesting. So, I talked to Curran about this a little bit, like, actually yesterday, and I thought it was hilarious. He started like randomly tweeting about the Celtics in the fourth quarter of the game yesterday. he's made a good point. It's like we're waiting for this team to show up. Do we even know if they exist anymore?
Yeah.
You know, like it's like we're waiting for these smart, disciplined, situationally sound, versatile. We're waiting for that to show up again. And does it exist anymore? Or is it slowly eroding the further we get away from Brady? And like last year, what you're getting at is last year, a lot of the things like the details that slipped, right? The operational issues they had, the penalties, like they couldn't get lined up straight at points last year. They had special teams mistakes, right? Like the kickoff returns in the last game against Buffalo, all that stuff that seems so uncharacteristic of the Patriots. In my head, I chalked that up to he had such a messed up coaching situation on offense that he had to swoop in and help over the air. And so the over the top Bill Belichick was sort of lost because Bill had to go over and work on offense, right?
Yeah.
And I thought now with moving Joe Judge back to special teams and having Billy O'Brien on offense and then Mayo and Steve Belichick on defense, like, okay, he's got experience at every level of the operation. Now he can go back to being the over the top guy and all the operational stuff's going to be tight again. And it's not.
No.
And it's not. And that to me is more alarming than Mac Jones's play. It's more alarming than the personnel situation. It's more alarming than anything because that's the thing that was such a hallmark. And that's the thing is like that's the thing that you don't need to hit on draft picks to get right. That's the thing that you don't need to sign the right free. Like that's the thing like where that's like supposed to be Bill's thing. And it makes you wonder, like I've thought a lot about this because it's like the Patriots made a living of like just waiting for the other team to step on its you know what. You know what I mean? Like that almost was their program, was waiting for the other team to just pee down its leg. And like so much of it was, we're going to bet that we can go on a 12-play or a 14-play drive with our consistent offensive players and our consistent quarterback. And then we're going to force you to do the same thing, and we're going to bet that you're going to mess up somewhere along the way. And it's going to happen enough times that we're going to be winning by 20 by the end of the game. That was the whole program, right? So much of it was that. And, like, it makes me wonder how much of that was just Brady, right? Because it's not like other coaches are going in there and saying, yeah, screw situations. Don't worry about third down. Don't worry about the red zone. You know, turn the ball over if you want. You know, it's not like other coaches are going in and telling you to do that, right? So what's the difference between the message Bill's giving his players and the message other coaches are? Well, a lot of it's probably that it's getting through to the players, and the players are listening.
Yeah.
And why are they listening? Maybe they're listening because they didn't want to let the greatest quarterback of all time down.
Yeah.
And now that player isn't there anymore. And so a lot of that stuff situationally isn't, I mean, it's just, I think it's at least worth thinking about, because I think everything that's happened over the last 4 years really makes you question, well, where did Brady's part of this end and Belichick's part of it begin? You know? And at the very beginning, it was obviously a lot of it was Belichick, but by the end was most of it Brady, you know?
I think that my thought has always
been. And I say
been,
that with all the respect, by the way, for Belichick. I don't want anybody to clip that and take it the wrong way, because I still think he's the greatest coach of all time. But I think it's fair to wonder, okay, like, so the first half of the dynasty was, a lot of it was Belichick, no question. Was the back end, like, mostly Brady? I don't know.
Do you, does that happen, Albert? Do things get clipped and taken out of context in our business from podcasts?
From time to time.
Yeah, I think that I've always been of the mind that there would not be a Brady without a Belichick, because I don't think Brady would have gotten an opportunity on another roster. I think Bill had built a true meritocracy, which allowed Brady to come to power in the first place. I think Belichick taught Brady the way to succeed. And then I think Brady took that more seriously than any player in NFL history. Or maybe even in sports history, right? Took that to such an extreme that it powered a dynasty. And now we're looking at, in this game, again, you have to wonder, let's see them against a couple other teams before, but Mac Jones, like, some of these completions, like, I think it was in the second quarter, he hit one, just the most ill-advised throw you'd ever see, completely across the field, and then did it again and got picked off. Right. And, you know, there's all this stuff where, I mean...
You know what I've noticed with him, Connor? Everything looks hard.
Everything. It looks like, he looks like me playing pickup basketball. Everything is laborious, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it just looks like, for him to get the ball downfield, it looks hard. For him to, like, the scramble plays, he kind of looks like a chicken with his head cut off. Like, and I think it's an example of, like, I think he can be a good quarterback, but everything has to be perfect around him. You know what I mean? Like, everything has to be right around him. And that's what he had at Alabama. And in those situations, he can be great, you know? Like, when he's got, like a great environment around him, like, he can be, because he's smart and he's accurate and he's good mechanically, like, all of that, like, he can... Like, if everything's right around him, he's fine. But the minute something breaks down and he has to play off schedule, or it requires him physically going and making a play, everything just looks so difficult for him to pull off.
Back to your last point, and this is the last thing I'll say about the Patriots, is, you know, it's not just one thing, but, like, the Patriots are getting, like, pantsed in a way where, like, Bones Fossil pulled off that trick field goal. You know?
Yeah.
And, like, situationally, they're getting crushed too. And now Bill had the really cool field goal block. Like, Bill is still Bill.
But that was a playoff of that, wasn't that? Like, because the school little guy comes running in and then you just release the guy out, right?
Yeah. But the
Bones
the,
got him there.
Yeah, Bones got him there. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. It doesn't look right. Doesn't look good.
Well, it's also like, if that happens to Connor on special teams, when you've, like, spent all this money for special teams only players in an era where the NFL is doing away with the kickoff and like trying to minimize special teams in every way it possibly can, it does beg the question, like, how many pieces of this program are just sort of behind the times? And is Bill sort of fighting the last war on his way of doing things?
Yeah. Bill, if you're out there, if you're listening, I know you listen to the MMQB podcast. I'm not rescinding my AFC championship pick yet, but boy, am I close. So pick it up. Colts, Rams. This was a great one. Yep. Two teams that I think you and I both hit on this season in terms of teams that we thought would surprise. No one let me down. This was a great game. Mm-hmm. Loved it from start to finish. Anthony Richardson was statistically not phenomenal, but got the team back to where they needed to be to put them in position to potentially win that game. The Rams and Puka Nacua, I mean, they're just, I feel like they're the story of the NFL this year, and no one's quite paying attention. This is a reborn Sean McVay. He's winning with, like, you know, a fifth round pick at running back that they drafted last year, you know, mid round guys. And we thought this could only work with superstar players. And
And Stafford looks good. And yeah, I mean, like, they're going to get Cooper Kupp back now. Like, mm-hmm. I mean,
is Tyler, that the end of Puka, by the way? That would be sad. I hope not.
I don't think so. Like, I know that they're similar players, like, stylistically, but I got faith that McVay and his crew are going to be able to find a way to get them back both out there at the same time.
Could you, and then we'll get into this, but you and I have both kind of written about this over the years. The reason that Cooper Kupp is so good is because he plays like a tight end, and Puka does too. You could almost be running like 13 personnel on the field with two really good wide receivers. Like, this could get nutty. And I think it could be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. But the Rams, man, sneaky playoff contenders, had them in there. I like everything about this.
You know what's great about it too, Connor, is they come out of this year, they project to have $74 million in cap space next year, and they'll have a first round pick for the first time in a decade.
Run it back. Go get a bunch of other good free agents next year now. Do it again.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
You could double dip at the end of the Stafford era.
I mean, if you think about it though, like, if you've got a bunch of Puka Nacuas on your team that are on rookie contracts, now all of a sudden those guys don't need to be paid for a couple of years. You can do a lot with your roster when it comes to veterans.
All right. So let's look at free agency next year. Leonard Williams, Chris Jones,
T. Higgins,
DJ Reader, T. Higgins,
Brian Burns. Although he'll be tagged, I'm sure. Chase Young.
That's a nice, like, right?
Yeah.
Kind of a budget option. There's a lot of good players. And there is every year, but I think that there is an attractiveness too. Chase Young would be
like right up their alley in like a Leonard Floyd kind of way, you know, like a reclamation project. I mean, like, the idea that they could have some money to spend with a nice base of young players and a revitalized Sean McVay makes a lot of sense.
It does. So they were up 17-0 in this game. And I think we will get to the Shane Steichen appreciation part of this, but to have a rookie quarterback and Zach Wilson came back from down 17 against the Chiefs, which I think was equally as impressive, but had a safety, had some help there right off the bat. But to be down as deep as Indy was, and with the style of quarterback that Anthony Richardson is now versus what he's going to become in the future, I think this was an absolute hell of a performance. They're down 23, sorry. And it's just, the whole thing is so good. It's so patient. They never lose control of the pacing, of the scheme. They were still running a steady diet of Zach Moss when they were down 23 points. And they understand that they can get quick strikes. They can get quick points. I don't think that the Colts have anything to be upset about here. This was as good of a morale booster as you could possibly want out of something.
I mean, it's like another example to me too of like the job Shane's done of keeping everybody on board after all the drama in the summer with Jonathan Taylor. And I thought, by the way, I thought that put Shane in an awful position. You know what I mean? Like that.
Yep.
You had like one of your best players, one of your most respected players, one of your most well-liked players who is completely being alienated by ownership. And you're a new coach trying to build a program. This is a really, really difficult situation for a first-year coach to be in. And so to be able to work through that and, you know, get the buy-in that he's gotten and build the running game that he's built without Jonathan Taylor in it and, you know, get the year that he's gotten so far out of Zach Moss and develop Anthony Richardson the way that they've developed Anthony Richardson. And You know, a lot of the things that we remember about the Colts when Frank Reich was winning there from, I would say, what, 18 to 21, right? Like, a lot of those things are kind of popping back up now. Like, oh, yeah, like DeForest Buckner's a damn good player, and they've got a pretty good front, and Shaq Leonard's really good. And, you know, I just, you know, you look across the board, and are they the best roster in the league? No, but they also aren't the worst. You know, like they, and like Anthony Richardson walked into a decent, like he's got a decent group around him, and they're not that far off, I think, from being pretty good. Now they're not there yet, but you certainly see where they're going to be in a position coming out of this year to take advantage of that window you have with your quarterback on his rookie contract, where they could really kind of make a run, you know, in the next couple of years with some of the core players they already have in place.
And Colts defense played really well, but, you know, and Gus Bradley, I think, is one of those guys that part of the reason they didn't go defense in the first place was because they wanted to hold on to Gus, even though the Colts interviewed like 67 people for that head coaching job before they landed on their candidate. But, you know, so I'll have to mention, you know, Kenny Moore, all those guys, defense played really well. The touchdown pass that Richardson had to Mo Alie-Cox was ridiculous. And to follow it up with two-point conversion, I mean, he's going to be a star, man. Like, he is going to be and maybe, we don't know what the limitations are on him yet. I'm sure we will find it, but, man, like, just a special player, you know, and just so much fun to watch. But I love that both of these teams are competitive. This game just made me happy. I've no other take other than this game made me very happy.
I'm so excited to see where Richardson goes, because he's, like, this guy who, like, I feel like, and it's funny, too, like, how Florida struggled in college football, kind of, like, and I don't know how closely you followed that, Connor, but it kind of like adds some context to like why like he was inconsistent last year. You know, sometimes you get that when a guy leaves a school and you can kind of see when he leaves, like, oh, maybe he wasn't like in the best position last year. You know, maybe there were some things wrong fundamentally there that he had to overcome. So you're seeing that. And I think like you see athletically the guy who he's so good athletically that he can kind of, he's got this escape hatch to make it work when things aren't perfect there for him, which buys him time to develop. And it does seem like you watch him play. And I just talked about how everything looks so hard for Mac. Like Anthony Richardson, everything looks easy, you know, like everything looks like some of his touchdown run, like there were a couple of his touchdown runs. I think maybe it was the one he had the concussion on against Houston where it looked like he was freaking jogging. And like you watch him and it's like it doesn't look like he's running very hard. And yet he's like passing three guys on the way to the end zone. You know what I mean?
He's Derrick Henry. He's quarterback Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's a bright future there. And so that segues into the last game that I really want to dive in and talk about, which is the Bears and the Broncos. And so good for the Broncos getting on the board. Russell Wilson played really well. And, you know, I wrote last week, I mean, yes, I crushed Sean Payton. But at the same time, I mean, I wrote he is going to get the best out of Russell Wilson. I just think the best out of Russell Wilson isn't consistently good enough to win you games. Like he's going to get the best out of whatever version Russell Wilson is now. But again, what is that? Like that
he's going to ride out. I think Sean Payton, I like watching Russell Wilson over the first month has given me this, like, I feel like now Sean Payton should be good enough to help the Broncos ride out the guaranteed portion of Russell Wilson's contract and buy them time to go and find the next quarterback. Like, that's what it should be, right? Like, your model, if you're Greg Penner, if you're the Walton family, is we know we probably made a mistake giving Russell Wilson this huge contract, but can we get competent enough play out of him where his presence on a roster gives us at least a chance to win week to week and can be competent enough? And then that buys us time where on the other side, it's like Alex Smith in Kansas City. I know I've used that example before. Can we turn him into that where like we can compete with him and then that'll buy us time over the next 3 or 4 years to find the guy that Sean Payton's really going to build around. Like that would be the goal. And I think what we've seen in the first month, despite the fact that they're 1-3, they've been fine. I mean, Russell Wilson's been fine. You know, like I think for the most part, you see a guy who's playing pretty well, not great, You know, it's not MVP Russell from 5 years ago, but like he's playing okay. He's been good. And you're also seeing a guy who like seems like he's been willing to subjugate himself to the team too, where like when was the last time a Russell soundbite made the rounds?
Yeah.
Like we're not hearing a lot from him, right?
Yeah.
So look, I think that part of it's in a good place. And I would say like the fact that they responded at halftime, the fact that the defense responded at halftime the way that it did is a decent sign, because I heard it got pretty hot in that locker room at halftime. Justin Fields, I believe, was 16 of 17 at that point, and the one incompletion was a Hail Mary. And they'd given up 70 points the week before. So the fact that this thing didn't keep spiraling in the second half for them defensively, because the defense has really been the problem the first month, is a decent sign they can at least be competitive the rest of the year.
Yeah. Now, the reason I wanted to talk about this game after the Colts game is, and so I kind of zoomed out on the Bears, what I wrote on Sunday, and let's take this step by step. So you blow, the Bears are up 28-0 at halftime. You blow that lead. Now it's 28-28. You have a fourth down and very, very short in opponent territory. And here's what Matt Eberflus does. He has Justin Fields try to draw the defense offsides. Then he takes a timeout. Then he sends him back out to hand the ball off. And in all fairness, Khalil Herbert was gashing people. He was gaining like 5 yards carry against that defense. But Justin Fields was electric. That was his best game of the year. He'd thrown
the best game of his career.
Might have been the best game of his career. You're right. Had four touchdowns throwing. And this was one of those moments where it's like the NBA Jam, like the ball's glowing. You don't take the ball out of your best player's hands, and he did. And I thought that was a tough spot for Eberflus, because not only are you fading your quarterback in that spot, you're also fading your defense a little bit. You're sort of double. You're making two statements there. And then obviously immediately the defense gives up a big play to get Denver into field goal territory. Yeah. And then what happens after that? But so Fields on that subsequent drive then becomes the Fields of the last few weeks, where when he's forced, and we've seen this in a couple games. I remember the Lions game last year. It's eerily similar. Yep. When he has to throw against sort of that prevent defense in order to get a team in field goal range, he can't do it. And I don't know if it's that he can't do it, or that something's not being called the right way for him, or he doesn't have enough experience doing it, but he turned into the Justin Fields of old. And if you take all of that and then you measure it against, and we'll talk about CJ Stroud next, how well CJ Stroud is playing, how well Anthony Richardson's playing, how well a lot of this could have gone, but you opted in for this, build the team defensively, sign these free agents, do all this, but it looks like, you know, the crux of your plan is kind of rotting, or at least fundamentally broken. Yeah. And I'm not ready to give up. And I don't want to sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, because I loved what the Bears did this offseason. I loved it. I thought it was the right thing to do, but it's just not looking like the right thing to do right now, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's like they have to, like, it's almost like they've got an identity crisis. Like, they don't know what they want to be on offense, and they're trying to figure it out. And now we're a month into the season, and it looked like they found something, and they got him throwing on rhythm. And I think that's such a key with Fields, is like when Fields is in trouble is when he's holding the ball. Mm-hmm. And when he's holding the ball, in a lot of cases you watch him and it's like, it's almost like his feet are glued to the turf. And he just, that whole thing about not seeing it fast enough, you can see it happen in real time. And because of that, like, I don't know if you can develop making a guy see it faster. It has nothing to do how smart he is. It has nothing to do with, it's just, it's how fast a guy sees it, how fast a guy can look at, can go through what's in front of him and process it. And I think like what you saw early in that game was they had him throwing on rhythm. They were running the ball really well. And I think so much of field success is tied to how well you're running the ball. Because if you're running the ball really well, it's like with Tua, right? Why is the ball out of his hand so fast? Because so much of what they do is off play action, and they run the ball really well, right? I think if you can get Fields playing that way, you can, like there's something there. The question is that the ceiling? Is it capped there? And the end of the game makes you ask that question again, because at the end of the game, now you have to throw because you're down and it's the fourth quarter and the clock's running out and you have the intentional grounding flag and then the interception. And so, yeah, I mean, I think finding that balance where you want to do some of the stuff you did last year, which wasn't sustainable because you're running the ball with your quarterback too much and you're going to get him killed, where you want to be, which is like way over here, like, is trying to find something in the middle. And I think they struck it for, you know, Luke Getsy and those guys, they found it for, you know, 3.5 quarters yesterday. And then once they got behind, you know, they were back. And again, like you said, the Fields that we've seen over the first 3 weeks of the season.
I mentioned that I just done my coaching list, and while
Zach Wilson would be number two on the 2021 draft quarterback power rankings for week 3. Or we
golly, four. Good for Zach.
How about Zach? Bounce back.
Bounce back, Zach. So when I did my coaching list, I will say that, and this isn't like a sourced report or anything, but I do think that people whose jobs it are to prepare for head coach openings are looking at Chicago right now and saying, this isn't going well. And yep. I hate to say that because I'm not one of those people that is like, fire this person, fire that person, because oftentimes that's not the solution. And when you fire someone, you're actually costing like a lot of like 200 people their jobs. It's not just one person. But that is one of these things where I'm starting to look at it and I'm thinking like, okay.
Connor, there's also a lot going on there. I mean, the Allen Williams situation, you know, and I think, you know, I know it was trending towards Matt Eberflus maybe taking over defensive play calling anyway. But one of the things that I know the McCaskies wanted Eberflus to do is they wanted him to be an over-the-top head coach. And like they wanted him to have play callers on both sides of the ball and be sort of the CEO. And when these things slip and now you're going to go and call the defense, now there's another layer of it that's on you. And the defense collapses in the second half the way that it did against Denver and can't make plays to close out a Denver team that was behind by 3 touchdowns. And yeah, look, I know one of the touchdowns was the Denver defense scoring, but it's fair to ask a lot of questions about where they are. And yeah, I mean, I can understand why people would have that one circled. And, you know, especially when you consider the sort of capital that they're going to have going into next year, how critical like next year's draft could be for them, you know, like, I think that when you look at a team that's set up that way, where it's like, they could have 2 top 5 picks. I mean, one of the fundamental questions becomes, who do we want making those picks? You know? And if it doesn't look good, the 2 years that those guys have had, then it's going to get you to ask that question. Do we want them making these 2 picks for us? And the McCaskies do have some history of pulling the plug fast. I believe was Trestman 2 years.
Trestman was 2 years, in the first year he led the league in offense.
Right. So they do have a history of this.
My only other take here is that I want to be crystal clear, because if you Google Connor Orange Chicago Bears, you would picture me as like a little person with like a bear pendant. Like, I was passionately defensive of Justin Fields. I was glowing. I love the Eberflus hire. I thought everybody's running for offensive guys. He was, I thought, the best, like the smartest person. I thought the OC hire was great. Like, I thought everything was really good. I thought the offseason was good. Like, economically, I thought they were striking at the right time, but sometimes these things just don't work out. The back end of this, Albert, and the reason why I wanted to sandwich this game in here, and we're going to start we're calling it a 2-minute drill. We haven't done any better than 4 minutes.
What was
minutes.
Our best? 6 or 4?
Like 6.5, I think, was our best. So let's try to hit this in 5. But I want to start it out with CJ Stroud, because he's just bonkers. He looks incredible. I've never seen a quarterback look that shaken in the preseason and then look that comfortable in the regular season. The slant that he hit to Nico Collins yesterday, where he's like the Pat Mahomes thing, where he's waiting, or it's almost like Stafford. And then he just, like, I saw Stafford make that same throw against the Colts. He's playing like a professional, and the Texans took it to the Steelers. They went out and, you know, first drive, Damian Pierce crack toss, you know, like CJ Stroud was running the ball. That was a full out domination. And Stroud now 6 touchdowns, no picks. He's having a hell of a season.
I mean, like, I don't want to like jump to conclusions here, but like seeing D'Amico Ryans, they're playing, they sort of look like the Niners, like how fast they play. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like you see an operation that's really crisp and it seems like everybody's moving in the same direction. Like, I've always felt like that was the most impressive thing about the Niners is how fast everybody seems to play, you know, relative to what their actual speed is. Like, it seems like everyone they put out on the field knows what they're doing. That's why the Trey Lance thing was so striking, right? Like, you watch Trey Lance play and it was like kind of I'm going to butcher that word. Antithetical. Is that right?
Sure. Nailed
antithetical. Antithetical to what they are. And that's why I think Brock Purdy's really good. Brock Purdy plays fast, you know? And I think you're seeing a lot of that with the way the Texans play. And I'll tell you, CJ, you know, CJ had a reputation of being like a little bit of a 7-on-7 quarterback for most of his time at Ohio State. And I don't know what happened, but he was a totally different player against Georgia in the bowl game. Like, he played unbelievable against Georgia in the bowl game. And he looked like he just started, like, almost like there was this, I'm just going to go play, you know? And if I have to run, I'm going to run. And I'm just going to let it all hang out and see what happens. And I'm seeing that same player now. It's almost like something turned on for him that day. Like going into that game against that level of competition, which was the best team that he would play as a college player, getting to play Georgia that year, last year. And now, like, you see him playing against NFL competition and it looks the same. Like, he's playing fast and the arm talent's always been there, but how quick it's like just clicked for him. It's really impressive. And I think, you know, you gotta give the young offensive coordinator their credit too, don't you?
Sure do. Bobby Slowick, he's having a great season. I think that's a guy who, when he went with D'Amico Ryans to Houston, everyone was like, he's not going to be there for very long. Just letting you guys know. Hopefully you have a backup plan. All right. Speaking of San Francisco, 49ers beat the Cardinals 35-16. Cards keep playing hard. And here's my only take here, guys. Christian McCaffrey is on my big money high roller fantasy team, and it's just going so great. And when he scores like 3 touchdowns in the first half, just sit him. Like, we're good. We don't need anything else. We're fine. We drafted well. Just put that guy.
He looks like he was created in a lab to play for Kyle Shanahan, which he might have been.
I
believe he was on those practice fields, right? Like he might have been created in a lab to play for Mike Shanahan or for Kyle Shanahan. But like, doesn't he look like, it's like, oh my God. It's like this guy like comes over from Carolina. And he's legitimately like the manifestation of what they look for in a skill player. It's unbelievable.
Absolutely amazing. But please, Kyle, like, just, I don't know if you're trying to break some records or something like that, but just keep him for the playoffs. Like, I think I would trade a really good fantasy season. But yes, I mean, I want everyone to be healthy. I'm knocking on wood as I'm saying this. I would trade a really good fantasy season to see the 49ers materialize deep in the postseason, which
would you consider him for MVP of the league?
Yes.
Yeah.
Have to. I think. He might, I think,
yeah,
you have
I
to.
Think he's up there.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to think about, because you had this team that had gone to 2 NFC title games and a Super Bowl in the 3 years previous, at a guy in midseason last year who now may be the MVP of the league.
Wild.
By the way, is how you make up for swinging and missing on the 3rd pick at quarterback.
For sure. Las Vegas, Los Angeles. The Chargers almost blew another one, but sealed the game in the most Chargers way possible on 3rd and 10, deep in their own territory. Justin Herbert just unleashes like a 4-yard dart to Josh Palmer. And it was just like, it was the perfect Chargers, right? The game starts to get to a cardiac event level. The Raiders are going to come back. They have time on the clock. And then And then Herbert just uncorks this thing, and it's just like, okay, we're good. Here's my elevator pitch on the Chargers, who are now at 2-2. I think this was a top team in the NFL. I think this early bye week is a good thing. I think if they can come out of there with J.C. Jackson and Brandon Staley on the same page, you can start to get Derwin James healthy. Khalil Mack had his best game as a Charger.
Six like sacks.
Their defense is, I think they're 30th in passing net yards per attempt and 20th against the run. Even if that improves incrementally, you have the second best offense in the NFL. Yeah. I just think that's a team to buy low on right now.
Yeah, and I think if, again, like if you can kind of, if like you can get them to like 5-3 halfway through the season, they're a team that could really take off, because I do believe in Kellen Moore as an offensive coordinator, and I do think that's something that's going to get incrementally better, you know, as the year goes on. And like, they're going to learn to play more so without Mike Williams, you know, and getting Quentin Johnston in there. And I think the line's going to get better. And, you know, like you said, defensively, if they get healthier, they didn't have Joey Bosa for this game, and Max still had six sacks, which is freaking insane. But they built some depth with their pass rushers because they've had guys in and out of the lineup. I'm with you. Like, I sort of feel like you're like, should we be careful about taking the cheese? Because it feels like the cheese is always there with the Chargers. You know what I mean?
But, I know. They are perpetually you know what I mean? The team. They are perpetually the team that's like, this is going to be good. I'm telling you, it's going to be good. And then it ends up not being so good. But I think this time things are going to be different. Don't worry.
Yeah.
I promise you.
This is the year.
This is the year. Minnesota gets their first win of the season over Carolina. Kirk Cousins threw a 99-yard pick six in this game, which is, it's amazing for like 11 reasons. He throws a pick six, and then God love him, he chases the defender 80 yards and then gets destroyed. Absolutely blown up. And that's all I really have to say about this game. I mean, it was good for the Vikings to come back and get their first win. Carolina at 0-4 now is concerning to me only because I think everyone knew this was going to take time. This roster is not good. It wasn't good. You know, they were trading it for scraps, but you have to at some point recover the optics of this situation with the two quarterbacks who were drafted behind Bryce taking off. Bryce already missing a game. He hasn't really had that signature Bryce Young game yet, and he will. I'm not at all worried about Bryce Young being a good quarterback in the NFL, but these next 3 weeks here, you know, we're going to have to start seeing the rubber meet the road. And I thought Bryce made a lot of good throws in this game. It's just,
are you, let me ask you this though. Are you worried about his ability to be a great quarterback?
What I mean?
Like, are you worried that, in other words, are you worried that maybe we're looking at Teddy Bridgewater here? You know what I mean?
No, although he almost, speaking of like 90-yard pick sixes, came dangerously close to one in this game. They tried to set him up with like a quick out or a quick screen kind of to his left. And I forget who it was, Vikings defensive end almost jumped up and picked that.
The only reason I asked that is like, it's sort of striking watching CJ Stroud and Anthony Richardson against, and then watching Bryce Young.
You're right.
Just because, like, physically.
Physically, yeah.
It's hard not to see it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you watch them, and it's hard not to see it. Like, where it's just, you wonder if there's just a cap on how far he can go, you know?
As a 5'8 male, I am, maybe predisposed to believing in Bryce Young. Yeah. A little bit more than I should. I think it will work. I think that they can make him in right. I think that here are the bookends, right? On one end, it's going to be Teddy Bridgewater. On the other end, it's going to be mobile Drew Brees. And that's exciting. I think it can get there.
Okay.
I still think it can get there. We're doing horribly on this, by the way. We're on our second 6-minute timer.
Let's roll.
34-31 Eagles over the Commanders. you know, I think same thing we say about the Commanders every week. They're like slightly better Cardinals. I'm very happy that they're performing well, but this is one of those games where I think the Eagles sort of flex the depth of their personnel, where not a lot of stuff is working for them early on. DeAndre Swift comes back to earth, and they got away from the run a little bit in this game, but you have your AJ Brown sledgehammer game, 9 receptions, 175 yards, 2 touchdowns. Like, this team can beat you in so many different ways.
Let's like leave it at that, because I do think like this to my one takeaway, because the Eagles can, and they're so strong in the lines of scrimmage, which I think is what's like floated them through some issues at linebacker safety, you know, with the passing game early in the year.
Yeah.
The AJ Brown trade, it was a heist, was an absolute heist.
Not bad.
Holy crap. Like, I mean, like, his ability to win games for you this way. Like, that's sort of my takeaway, is like, and you have to give Howie Roseman credit, because it seems obvious now, but like, there are a lot of teams that like will, there are a lot of teams that will hold on to their mistakes and that will chase their mistakes. And they'll be 3 or 4 years into their mistake and be like, well, maybe we weren't wrong. Howie Roseman spent a second rounder on JJ Arcega-Whiteside in 2019, a first rounder on Jalen Reagor in 2020. Right. And neither of those worked out. What do you do? He kept swinging. He took Devontae Smith with his first rounder in 2021, traded up for him, and then spent his 2022 first rounder on A.J. Brown.
Can you imagine if that team had Justin Jefferson, A.J. Brown, and Devontae Smith? How cool that would have been. Anyway, Buccaneers, Saints, Derek Carr ended up making it to this game, ended up playing, but the Buccaneers rolled. It was 26-9. I mean,
break up the Bucs.
It's awesome. I love it. I think it's fantastic. 3 touchdown passes from Baker Mayfield. Chris Godwin was in this game. 8 catches, 114 yards. Like, this is one of these teams that I think we're just so hesitant to say, okay, they're pretty good, but this is still the core of that Brady Super Bowl roster.
Yep. A lot of guys with rings there.
Yeah. So I don't know. Why not? Why not the Buccaneers, right? But by the way, only person that was in on the Buccaneers this preseason was my buddy Tyler Dunn over at Go Long. The only one. I picked them to go 3-14. So
Ty was all over it, huh?
Ty was, Buccaneers are going to make the playoffs. I thought he was crazy, and that's why Tyler Dunn's Tyler Dunn. Smart guy.
Yep. And I think like Baker is such the perfect quarterback for that group too. So
really is.
Yeah, just perfect. Exactly what that group needed. Like, the overlooked championship group gets like the hair across his ass quarterback, and let's go.
Tennessee and Cincinnati, 27-3. We had a vintage Derrick Henry game. I just think the Bengals are exhausted. Like, I think the Bengals receivers are exhausted. I think the receivers are, and we saw that Jamar Chase's quote, "I'm always effing open." I think that there's some frustration there. It's always tough to talk to, you know, people who look like me 10 minutes after the game and try to explain to them what's going on. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just a bunch of
a-holes and quarter zips.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I have a punchable face. I get it.
With ketchup stains from the halftime hot dog.
Yeah. And, you know, why aren't you getting the ball more? It's like, I'm surprised there aren't more face punchings. And I'm not saying that Bengals beat crew is great, by the way. They're all good people. But they're tired because they're running a lot of routes and they're not getting the ball. Joe Burrow's tired because he's trying to play on a busted calf. And that defense is tired because they're out on the field all the time. And then you add the Derrick Henry sledgehammer effect. This is the perfect game for him to get rolling. It was, you know, and from there on out, you have the game that you have. And good for the Titans kind of staying in contention here. But the Bengals, I think we're cresting, like we're entering the universe of lost season territory. We're 1 week away from lost season territory.
Was it your tweet that was the skill position tweet? Somebody tweeted something. Was that you?
I don't have good tweets, so probably not.
Okay, no, so somebody tweeted yesterday. Oh, it was Kevin Clark, I think. Who does have lots of good tweets. He's sort of the tweet king. He uh, He said the Bengals are going to last season their way into like into a skill position player in the draft. Like,
yeah,
they're going to wind up with like Brock Bowers for next year.
Right. I mean, it could, you know, and this has happened with Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers, right, where they had a couple of bad seasons. He ended up with Bosa and, you know, that works yeah. out. I mean, it's OK. Yeah. And whatever, who cares? We picked them all to win a Super Bowl and they didn't win it. All right. They're going to come back next year with probably a replacement receiver for someone that they're going to have lost. They're going to have Ja'Marr Chase at the peak of his athletic ability, a replacement for Joe Mixon, and away we go with a healthy Joe Burrow. I don't think there's, you know, what else you do? What else are you going to do? I mean, I think you got to let Joe Burrow get healthy.
They're going to be fine long-term. It's just, yeah. You know what's actually interesting though? Like, the Niners had another lost season where if they hadn't traded up for
for Trey Lance, yeah.
For Trey Lance, you know who went in the draft slot that they wound up in?
Who?
Micah Parsons.
Oh, my God.
So they had the 12th pick that year. That's where they traded up from 12 to 3. Micah Parsons went 12.
That is awesome.
Can you imagine if they had Micah Parsons and Nick Bosa together?
That is so good. Baltimore 28, Cleveland 3. Consider myself shocked here. I mean, you could say, oh, they didn't, Browns didn't have Deshaun Watson, yeah. but they've kind of been winning games without Deshaun Watson all season. Yeah. And I thought that the way that Jim Schwartz's defense was playing, they were going to eat Lamar Jackson alive. Now, you know, Dorian Thompson-Robinson throws 3 picks. You're giving the team a lot of extra possessions. Baltimore can grind you down. But this was a really good Lamar game, 15 yep. and 19, 186 for 2, and then 27 rushing yards and 2 more touchdowns. The Ravens are 3-1. They're 2-0 on the road.
Seems to be working.
Yeah, the Todd Monken thing seems to be working. Good vibes. Zay Flowers is, you know, we're not at the point. There's so many rookies that I feel like we haven't had that whoa moment yet where we really talk about them on a grand stage. But Zay Flowers is making a huge difference in that offense. Yeah. You know, yeah, huge. Like,
and I think like they've got, and maybe this is because Monken's coming from the college game, but it seems like they've got a really good idea how to use him mm-hmm. and the way they get him the ball creatively and everything else. Like Zay Flowers felt to me coming out like one of those players where he sort of had to go to the right place, you know, like to get the most out of him. Not to say he wouldn't have been a good player anywhere, but I think like he had to go to the right place and a place that was going to use him creatively. And it feels like that's exactly where he landed.
Last but not least, the Falcons and the Jaguars. I actually watched this one in people version this morning after watching the Toy Story game yesterday. You know, this was Jacksonville has turned London into such a strategic advantage that Doug Peterson said after the game, we really needed this one. We really needed to fly like 7 hours across 2 more time zones and completely exhaust our team to have a sliver of an advantage over the Falcons. But listen, the Jaguars, I think, are back on the upswing. I think yep. the Falcons are hitting kind of their early season slump, but neither of these teams are teams that I have like kind of a big picture panic on. Like, I think they're both going to be good teams. I think they're both going to be in it at the end of the season. And, you know, this season has highs and lows, ups and downs.
Yep, and that London game will get you. So I've learned not to take a ton from the London game because it's a standalone game, but it's a weird one. And so, like, you know, the Falcons probably played their worst game of the year. The Jaguars is a nice bounce back for them. I a lot of times that London game, I feel like the result can wind up being circumstantial. You know what I mean? The result can be kind of what comes of whatever position the team is in. Like if a team comes in rolling, then they can use that trip to build on it. If a team comes in a tough spot, like it's just, I feel like whatever you are going into that game gets magnified a little bit. So I wouldn't read too much into it.
Absolutely. Well, we did it. Our 6-minute drill was about 17 minutes today, but that's okay. Albert and I like football. I like talking to Albert. Thanks as always for coming by. And hey, we got the Thursday show coming up with Matt and Gilberto. Give that a listen. Please leave us a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show. Let us know what you think. Thanks as always to Albert. Thanks to producer Shelby. We will see you next Monday.
going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
In honor of Military Appreciation Month, Verizon thought of a lot of different ways we could show our appreciation, like rolling out the red carpet, giving you your own personal marching band, or throwing a bumping shindig. At Verizon, we're doing all that in the form of special military offers. That's why, this month only, we're giving military and veteran families a $200 Verizon gift card and a phone on us with a select trade-in and a new line on select unlimited plans. Think of it as our way of flying a squadron of jets overhead while launching fireworks. Now that's what we call a celebration, because we're proud to serve you. Visit your local Verizon store to learn more. $200 Verizon gift card requires smartphone purchase, $799.99 or more with new line on eligible plan. Gift card sent within 8 weeks after receipt of claim. Phone offer requires $799.99 purchase with new smartphone line on Unlimited Ultimate or postpaid Unlimited Plus. Minimum plan $80 a month with autopay plus taxes and fees for 36 months. Less $800 trade-in or promo credit applied over 36 months. 0% APR. Trade-in must be from Apple, Google, or Samsung. Trade-in and additional terms apply.